Primal Leadership by Daniel Goleman, Richard Boyatzis, and Annie McKee. Continued, Cassette 6, Side 2. Next, Don't Align, Attune. For a vision to be compelling, it needs to touch people's hearts. People need to see, feel, and touch the values and vision of the organization to make these abstractions meaningful. Tuning people in to a meaningful vision has integrity at its heart. People need to feel as if they can reach for the organization's dream without compromising their own dreams, their own beliefs, and their values. Then, people first, then strategy. Leaders who use resonance-building styles model norms that support commitment, involvement, active pursuit of the vision, and healthy, productive work relationships. They create connection by focusing on what people really want and need, and by deliberately building a culture that supports good health in the tribe. When a leader focuses on people, emotional bonds are created that are the ground in which resonance is sown, and people will follow that leader in good times and bad. Resonance creates an invisible but powerful bond between people based on a belief in what they are doing and a belief in one another. For that to happen, people need to connect with one another in real time, not just online, around their work. They need to talk, laugh, share stories, and just perhaps build a dream together. The third finding, sustaining emotional intelligence. First, turn vision into action. At every opportunity, leaders need to demonstrate what the vision looks like, what it feels like, and how people can live it today as well as in the future. They use themselves as instruments of discovery and change, get close to the process, and don't let go until they reach the goal. Ideally, in each interaction, each decision, leaders act consistently with their own values and with the values of the organization they intend to create. They lead through coaching, vision, democracy, and respect for the people around them. And they call on others to live up to their own values and the mission of the organization. In addition to the primal leader's stance, there are other necessary steps for turning vision into action: changing organizational structures and job designs, changing relationship norms, reshaping systems and performance expectations to better match the vision, and making what people do fit better with the organization's mission. Next, create systems that sustain emotionally intelligent practices. People matter, but so do systems, rules, and procedures. Reminders of what is acceptable and what is not are powerful drivers of behavior, be these policies and procedures that are actually enforced, or attention to the right leadership behaviors. Specifically, for an organization to sustain emotionally intelligent practices, the rules, regulations, and human resource practices have to be totally in sync with the desired outcomes. There is no sense hoping for emotionally intelligent leadership when, in fact, it is not recognized in the performance management systems or reward systems. So change the rules, if need be, to reinforce the vision. Then, manage the myths of leadership. Myths and legends withstand the vagaries of the day-to-day grind and the upheaval of change. When the right myths are in place, that is, those that support emotional intelligence and resonance, people have an easier time holding on to a positive emotional climate, even in the face of adversity. Leaders have an enormous impact on the overall emotions of an organization, and they are often at the center of the organization's stories. Managing the myths, the legends, and the symbols of the office can be a powerful driver of change. By using the symbolic power of their role to model emotional intelligence, leaders can create new, positive myths through even small gestures and actions. Creating organizations that are emotionally intelligent is ultimately the leader's responsibility. It is up to leaders to help the organization identify its reality, including the cultural norms that hinder it, and then to explore the ideal vision of what could be, and to help members of the organization uncover their own roles in that vision. And it is leaders who attune people to the vision and begin taking action toward change. Emotionally intelligent leaders who use resonance-building leadership styles and create norms that foster healthy, effective working relationships, rather than using styles that breed fear and cynicism, will release a powerful force, the collective energy of the organization to pursue any business strategy. These kinds of leaders build with positives. They craft a vision with heartfelt passion. They foster an inspiring organizational mission that is deeply woven into the organizational fabric. And they know how to give people a sense that their work is meaningful. Chapter 11, Creating Sustainable Change. How does a leader create resonance in an organization that is sustained over time? It's a challenge, but it can be done by ensuring that the entire fabric of the enterprise is interwoven with emotionally intelligent leadership. After all, if it takes emotionally intelligent leadership to create resonance in the organization, then the more such leaders there are, the more powerful that transformation will become. In any large organization, there will naturally be some pockets of resonance and some pockets of dissonance. The overall ratio of resonance to dissonance, we propose, determines that organization's emotional climate and relates directly to how it performs. The key to shifting that ratio in the right direction lies in cultivating a dispersed cadre of leaders who will create emotionally intelligent groups. By their very nature, however, organizations don't readily encourage new learning. In fact, leaders who wish to instill widespread change need to first recognize that they're working against a paradox. Organizations thrive on routine and the status quo. Professionals in organizations rely on the established systems in order to carry out their jobs with minimal resistance and stress. As a result, most people in companies today have not challenged themselves to learn something really different for a long time. Developing a new leadership style often means fundamentally changing how one operates with other people. But the paradox of trying to introduce new learning in organizations makes that a difficult task at best, and not one accomplished only in the classroom. Sadly, most executive education and leadership development efforts fall far short of the mark, not only because of how they are done, but also because of what they do not do. Even the best development processes, those based on exploring the five discoveries, will not help to change the organization if they focus only on the person and do not take into account the power of the emotional reality and the culture. Consider the situation described in the following section, in which the leadership's intentions were good, but the outcome of organization-wide learning was little more than a few people changed and lots of time and energy wasted. When leadership building fails. The CEO of a Pacific Rim bank wanted to put his top 600 executives through leadership development after he himself had worked with an executive coach on emotional intelligence competencies, had gone through a 360-degree feedback process, and had dramatically changed his leadership style. He instructed his head of human resources to design a program for his top executives so that they could receive similar development opportunities. But when the HR department posted the program offering, few people signed up. Only the inquisitive and the courageous went through it, rather than those who might have benefited most. The problem was that the program just didn't seem relevant to people in this organization. Culturally, training was considered a waste of time, and going to a workshop was certainly not a priority for anyone. One important way to ensure that learning does feel important is to make it a mandate that the top leader is driving personally. To succeed, leadership development needs to be the strategic priority of the enterprise, an issue that is galvanized and managed at the highest levels by the executive committee or governing board. That is what the CEO of the Pacific Rim Bank failed to recognize. In fact, he was shocked when so few people seemed interested in receiving the same kind of coaching and feedback that had changed his own leadership style in such obvious ways. Where before, this CEO had become a compulsively focused, pace-setting leader, he had now expanded his leadership repertoire, becoming more affiliative, more visionary, and more of a coach. He had begun to have coaching sessions with his direct reports and asked his staff to brief him on key events in his employees' lives. One example of his transformation came when he stopped a project meeting to send home a staff member whose husband, he had heard, had suddenly become very ill. A simple gesture of human kindness that would not have occurred to him before. Even so, the leadership development program he made available at the bank was sparsely attended because it was perceived as unimportant to top management's overall agenda. The CEO had indeed had a transformational experience, but he'd kept the process itself quiet. Sure, people could see changes in him, but no one really understood the learning experience that he'd undergone, the coaching, the feedback, his development plan. So the new leadership program appeared as just another in an expanding menu of the company's HR offerings. By funneling the program through his HR training director, the CEO sent the unintended message that it was a low priority. For leadership development to succeed, top management needs to demonstrate that commitment comes from the top. Unfortunately, what we've observed in most companies, as we saw at the Pacific Rim Bank, is the opposite. Leadership development typically becomes the mandate of human resource departments. But despite their technical expertise and, in many cases, their contribution to the strategy, HR people cannot, on their own, drive significant change in behavior or culture. Even the best HR professionals will admit that they operate under a cloud in which people perceive their work as out of touch with day-to-day managerial issues. Although this appraisal may be unfair, it points to the importance of an organization's top leaders being actively involved in any leadership development process. There's yet another reason that commitment must come from the top. Change of the sort we are talking about requires effort, support, and resources, and not just money. New leadership means a new mindset and new behaviors, and in order for these to stick, the organization's cultures, systems, and processes all need to change too. In the development of resonance-building leaders, we are talking about tapping into and changing the emotional reality of the organization itself, the culture, as well as deep-seated behaviors. Because most groups and organizations revolve around the status quo, fighting off anything that threatens it, this level of change requires courageous leadership, stamina, and unswerving commitment. Executive coaching. Leaders need to balance learning, which by definition means becoming vulnerable, with managing their image as leaders. One good way to do this is to work with an executive coach, a relationship in which it is safe to explore and where leaders can have an opportunity to talk more freely than they may have done with anyone ever about their own dreams and their business challenges. In the context of executive coaching, leaders can talk about things that they feel pain and passion about and really get at the core issues for themselves, their teams, and the organization. Of course, the sheer level of emotion in these conversations is far beyond what typically occurs in business, so the coaching relationship must be trusting, totally confidential, and almost sacrosanct. Most executive coaching processes involve leadership assessment and an ongoing focus on development. They also include work on the broader organizational issues, especially those in the people realm, such as the leader's challenges with his or her team, the organizational climate, culture, and politics, and how all this fits with the business strategy. Leadership assessment and feedback can be done in a number of different ways, but the best practice starts with a series of interviews and observations by a professional executive coach. The interviews should look and feel much like conversations a good part of the time, with the intention of building a strong, confidential relationship between the leader and the coach. Typical processes include conversations about the leader's career and life history, discussions of current managerial and leadership challenges, and discussions of the organizational level issues as well. including things such as climate, politics, and systems. In addition, this phase often includes observation of the leader in action at meetings, when giving speeches, and when engaging in one-on-one performance reviews, among other things. One such process, called A Day in the Life, was developed by our colleague Fran Johnston of the Gestalt Institute of Cleveland. The coach spends a typical day with the leader, literally following her around, attending meetings and one-on-one sessions with staff, even sitting in on phone calls. Of course, all of this is done with a clear explanation to employees, with the added benefit that the leader is seen to be actively involved in learning and leadership development. More structured assessment is also usually a part of the coaching process and will often include behavioral event interviews and 360-degree feedback on emotional intelligence, managerial style, climate, and other factors pertinent to the particular leader and her organization. When it comes to coaching on team and organizational issues, it helps for the coach to have more than just the leader's perspective. Whether or not the leader is really suffering from CEO disease, it is a fact of executive life that much information is filtered and many issues are softened or disguised before they reach the top. Through interviews, observation, and assessment, and even a mini-dynamic inquiry process, a coach can gather information about what's really going on in an organization that can be truly helpful to the leader. Of course, for this process to work over the long term, the coach needs to honor the confidentiality of all relationships, even with those people interviewed to gather information about the leader, which means that the coach presents the leader with only general themes, not specifics. Coaching enables a leader to further her own learning quickly while getting a different and sometimes more accurate picture of what's happening in the organization, especially with respect to how people experience the leader and the leadership team. You can't ignore culture. Even a mandate from the highest levels of the organization doesn't guarantee that a leadership development initiative will bring about needed changes. Consider the case of a professional services firm we worked with. The top managers of this large company recognized that, given the changing nature of their business, unless they encouraged people to behave in very different ways, the company would lose its competitive edge. Rather than attempting to change the collective habits of the whole organization, which felt too daunting, the leadership decided that if enough individual managers learned new competencies, the culture would change itself. Several years later, however, it's become clear that all efforts at change in the company have failed miserably. Leadership practices are a mess, morale is down, and turnover is at an all-time high, and the company is being sold against the management's will. At first, top management did everything right. They made it clear that leadership development was a critical strategic priority. They did the research and crafted a pristine competency model in which most of the competencies related to emotional intelligence. They designed a state-of-the-art development process, focusing explicitly on the five discoveries, and they selected highly motivated people to participate. In short, the company's management crafted a comprehensive change process. They even began to revamp the HR processes to hire and promote for the new leadership competencies. Intuitively, the leadership knew that the organization reinforced negative cultural norms. They could see that old habits were out of sync with what new clients, vendors, and partners were expecting. But they weren't exactly sure how the culture could change, and since changing the deeply ingrained habits and underlying culture of the entire organization seemed like an impossible task, management decided instead to focus on developing individual leaders. Hopes for a ripple effect throughout the enterprise diminished quickly when one major glitch became apparent. Some new leadership competencies went so against the cultural grain that when people began to use them, they got into trouble. For example, one of the new competencies called on people to have courage when attempting to do the right thing for the business, even when that meant standing up to senior management. One manager, encouraged by the top's apparent willingness to foster this kind of risk-taking, put himself on the line over what he saw as a business and an ethical issue. As he began to discuss this issue in the leadership program, he came to see this as an opportunity to practice a new behavior and, he thought, to help the company do the right thing. Given the hype about the new competencies, his boss's response wasn't too surprising, only very disappointing. When the manager confronted his boss, the boss did what he knew was expected of him and praised the manager for his courage in standing up for what he believed. But then, behind closed doors, that same boss laid out a plan to get rid of the guy. He was just too dangerous. We saw similar scenarios play out again and again in this organization. Even when it was clear that leadership behaviors needed to change, and even when people knew what they should do, they could not act in new ways. The pockets of resistance were too widespread, the inertia in the culture too powerful. Individual leaders alone cannot change a culture. For a new vision to take hold, it must spread throughout every level. In an organization as enormous as this one, it would have taken hundreds of converts to bring about a wholesale cultural change. The lesson is that you can't ignore culture, and you can't hope to change it one leader at a time. By ignoring the big picture and focusing instead on developing leaders one by one, this company's leadership failed to bring about critically needed changes that would have helped the organization succeed. Although people tried to do things differently, basic patterns didn't change, making it next to impossible for individual leaders to achieve key learning goals they'd set for themselves. Powerful drivers of behavior were never addressed, and they ultimately stalled the entire change program. As research shows, there are a number of reasons why leadership development initiatives fail. As we have seen, the primary reason is that many development programs do not focus on the whole person or on the discoveries that lead to sustainable change, such as finding one's own dream and tying development to it. Other programs fail to take into account the power of the culture when they do the following. Ignore the real state of the organization, assuming that if people learn what they should do and be, systems and culture will automatically support them in the change process. Attempt to change only the person, ignoring the norms of the groups they work in every day and the larger surrounding culture in play. Drive the change process from the wrong place in the organization. Leadership development that transforms people and organizations must start at the top and be a strategic priority. Fail to develop a language of leadership, meaningful words that capture the spirit of leadership by symbolizing ideas, ideals, and emotionally intelligent leadership practices. Naturally, programs that fail to take these issues into account create frustrated individuals, cynicism, and wasted time, energy, and money. Succeed with a process, not a program. Let's say that, as a leader, you get it. You've already set the stage by assessing the culture, examining the reality and the ideal at the organizational level. You've created resonance around the idea of change, and you've identified the people who will take top leadership roles in the future. The next step is to design a process that continually builds leadership that gets results. This process will include helping your organization's leaders uncover their own dreams and personal ideals, examine their strengths and their gaps, and use their daily work as a laboratory for learning. What else can you do? For one thing, avoid the traps of many leadership development programs that we've seen. Too often, they are simply executive education classes focused on engaging people in learning topical content from experts. Strategy, marketing, finance, general management, and similar abstractions. While all of these academic areas are of great importance to many leaders, no discrete program focused on them will add up the transformation of the person or the company. And although we've sometimes referred to leadership development programs in this audiobook, in fact, what many organizations need aren't just one-time programs, but a process built as a holistic system that permeates every layer of the organization. The best of these leadership development initiatives are based on an understanding that true change occurs through a multifaceted process that penetrates the three pivotal levels of the organization: the individuals in the organization, the teams in which they work, and the organization's culture. Based on the principles of adult learning and individual change, such processes take people on intellectual and emotional journeys, from facing the reality to implementing the ideal. We found that the design of this kind of leadership development differs in fundamental ways from what one typically finds in most business schools or executive training centers. The best development processes create a safe space for learning, making it challenging but not too risky. Moreover, in order for leaders to truly learn something new, they need experiences that are both relevant and frame-breaking. The experiences have to be different enough to capture people's imagination, but familiar enough to seem relevant. As our colleague John O. Hannafin of the Gestalt Institute of Cleveland often cautions, "When attempting to bring about change in a person or a company, you've got to be careful to manage your perceived weirdness index." Unquote. In other words, break the rules, but don't scare people away. Strong leadership development processes are focused on emotional and intellectual learning, and they build on active participatory work, action learning and coaching, where people use what they're learning to diagnose and solve real problems in their organizations. They rely on experiential learning and on team-based simulations, where people engage in structured activity that they can use to examine their own and others' behavior. Exemplary processes are multifaceted, using a bold mixture of learning techniques. They are conducted over a period of time, and they take the culture head-on. Action learning. A senior vice president of a U.S. telecom listened intently as people in his company, who'd just completed a year-long multifaceted executive development process, each made their action learning presentations. When they were finished, the senior vice president said, almost in disbelief, "These people are leaders. I had no idea we could find this in our company. Here we are struggling to find a few key leaders, and there are 20 of them here today. 20! I wish people would speak at all our meetings the way they have today. They showed leadership, and they showed courage." Why was this vice president surprised? After all, he should have expected greatness. He had just spent several $100,000 on this leadership development initiative, which had been conducted for high-potential women and people of color. At this concluding event, he'd expected to encounter maybe a few outstanding people and to hear some mildly interesting presentations about their action learning projects. Instead, he'd heard all four groups and all 20 people discuss key strategic issues and how to deal with them. He had heard people present creative, powerful, and viable plans for addressing some of the issues that were keeping him up at night and causing no end of concern for leaders all over the company. And he'd heard the participants talk directly about the unspeakables, those issues that the organization never addressed because they were so loaded politically. The action learning projects that were part of this company's executive development process could be thought of as active experimentation with a purpose. The method enables participants to practice what they're learning, drawing on real-life challenges in the organization's business as the starting point for team projects among participants. With learning as a primary objective and achieving outcomes as a secondary purpose, each team works on its specific organizational challenge during the length of the course. Some principles to consider when engaging in action learning include the following. The projects must be strategic in nature, multidimensional, ambiguous, that is, there really is no one answer, and new, meaning no one is currently working on the issue in the organization. There must be active executive-level sponsorship in determining the projects and working with the teams. Teams must work on the projects, not individuals, and the teams need support throughout the duration of the project in creating a healthy climate, maintaining functional norms and emotional intelligence, dealing with conflict, focusing on learning rather than achievement, and so on. The process of learning needs to be examined, and this examination needs to be expected as part of the outcome. The projects should be highly visible. Resources must be dedicated to the teams, and in particular, people need to be released to some extent from normal duties to work on the projects. Building culture change into leadership development. When team members at Unilever began to design a new leadership development initiative for top management, they were nervous. They knew that the global company needed something to help it become a more enterprising and competitive industry leader. Their proposal, therefore, was intended to fundamentally change leadership behaviors and create an entirely new, enterprising company culture. Overall, the process would span years, levels, geographies, and businesses. It would call on leaders to rethink everything from their personal dreams to their visions for their business to how to execute leadership. It was a big, bold proposition. As leaders began to paint a picture of the seminars and retreats planned for the company, they used unusual words such as passion, emotionally charged, vulnerability, risk, and personal vision. In many conversations over a period of months, they watched people's faces for reactions and pushed on. Certain that their framework for individual and organizational change was good, and that executives needed to be emotionally engaged in the process if it was to be successful. This was the plan. First, the top 100 leaders in the company would participate in a kickoff retreat led by Chairman Neil Fitzgerald and Anthony Bergmans. There, they would explore in a personal way habits of the past, as well as personal beliefs and their dreams for the future. It would be held in a place sure to inspire and certain to get the top team out of its comfort zone. It would present physical challenges while simultaneously taking people on an emotional journey with their colleagues, a chance to get to know each other and develop a level of trust and openness heretofore unthinkable, a chance to be honest. It would be an experience that touched people's hearts and became relevant to them in their lives once they returned. The ultimate goal was to take these new behaviors, the new mindset, and new ways of working together back to the business. After that first retreat, the second phase would begin, when the top 500 leaders company-wide would attend a series of seminars designed to put into practice the new norms of the culture, turn vision into action, and drive change in the businesses. Then, over several years around the world, business units one step below top management would mirror the process, engaging people's dreams and passion, and then turning these toward the business. As the ideas caught on, and leaders started to get excited about the prospects, conversations became more specific and focused on what people would actually do in these seminars. For example, executives would engage in deep reflection and conversation with one another about important and meaningful aspects of personal and business life, values, relationships, vision, hopes and dreams for the future, the regrets and high points of the past. They would chart their successes and their failures, focusing on what they personally bring to each new challenge. They would speculate about how to overcome personal and organizational shortcomings, and create a collective vision of the future. Through this important work of emotional engagement, they would create a learning community, teams of people who took the process of development and business growth seriously, and who would challenge each other to change. The idea of close, connected conversations about what the executives hoped to be and do in the future was appealing and energizing. In discussions, people often chimed in with even more ways to encourage executives to reflect deeply, move beyond platitudes, and talk straight with one another about life, about change, and about the business. They talked about how to build on the passion this process would spark, and they talked about how to direct this new energy toward a hopeful future for Unilever. But occasionally, the design process got bogged down. This usually happened when more traditional, familiar leadership and strategy sessions were suggested. Energy would simply drain from conversations when more typical processes were considered. Heady discussions of stakeholders, objectives, and blasting obstacles to success usually brought to mind the many strategic planning programs the Unilever managers had attended over the years. And as good as they may have been, this was not what was needed now. In one such discussion, a top Unilever manager couldn't stand it anymore. Quietly, but with passion, he said, "People, we must be very careful here. Our leaders have done every kind of strategic planning exercise in the book, facilitated by the best business school professors and management gurus. They don't need another strategy, and the last thing they need is another stakeholder analysis." His point was that these executives understood the strategy. Now it was time to engage it passionately, while developing a different mindset and new leadership behaviors in order to turn vision into reality. When leaders engage only on an intellectual level with a strategy, it's virtually impossible to maintain energy and commitment, and learning suffers. So what did the company's leaders need most? To become emotionally engaged with their own passion and their dreams, with each other and with a strategy, said this executive, and to connect with the possibilities of the future to be given a chance to do something about it. Unquote. For most leaders, and even most managers, it is not more clarity about the strategy that will make the difference. It is not yet another 5-year plan, and it is not another mundane leadership program. What makes the difference is finding passion for the work, for the strategy, and for the vision, and engaging hearts and minds in the search for a meaningful future. One more intellectual planning exercise is not going to get people engaged, and it certainly won't change a culture. Even the best leadership development programs, if conducted in a vacuum, do little to foster the kind of change that organizations need today. What leaders must do is find a way to get executives emotionally engaged with each other and with their visions, and to see to it that they begin to act on those visions. People change when they are emotionally engaged and committed. Fortunately, at Unilever, the planning process for leadership development hit on this key to successful change and development. The design team made sure it kept the focus on passion and discovered ways to turn that passion toward real action in the business. And the fact that senior leaders were guiding the process from the start ensured that people would be held accountable for change. It was a process that truly would build cultural change into leadership development. Creating buzz. By design, the process employed at Unilever had lots of people thinking about leadership, speculating on their own organizational culture, and considering change. But for leadership development to take hold, one needs to create buy-in throughout the organization, which, as we've seen, begins with a mandate from the top. Leaders need to attend to the process themselves, as Chairman Neil Fitzgerald and Anthony Bergmans have done at Unilever. Moreover, to really draw people in, the process itself must be made emotionally rewarding. For example, make sure people understand that their inclusion in the initiative is a sign of admiration for their abilities. At Unilever, being invited into the process was considered an honor, a mark of prestige, and a sign that the company had spotted the participant as making a difference to the business. Seeing the program as giving themselves an advantage in career advancement, executives sought out the chance to be included. That didn't happen by accident. It was a strategy. Roles for point people were scripted, letters were written, and seeds were deliberately planted in informal conversation, all designed to create an audible buzz about developing leadership capabilities and changing the culture of the company. Key leaders spoke with people personally about why they were being selected and what it could mean to be a leader in the new organization they were trying to build. But Unilever also knew it needed to keep candidate selection clean. If there were politics involved, it would be obvious to everyone, and the process would lose credibility. We saw this happen at a European manufacturer, where three kinds of people ended up in their high potential program. Those who deserved to be there, those who needed the education in order to catch up to the younger leaders, and those who top leadership felt were entitled to the perk because of long years of service. Imagine the dynamics. Everyone knew who was in which category. Organizational leaders need to create a selection process that allows for the paradox of involvement. The best of the best get in, and everyone has a chance. All this means having real conversations, not merely releasing a memo or a voicemail telling people when and where to show up for a new leadership program. It's more effort, yes, but worth it. Attending to the entry process can determine the success of the entire initiative. Once the leadership development process is underway, developing and using a language of leadership is a powerful way to create the buzz important to people's continued involvement. For example, the Unilever Executives Kickoff Retreat was held in Costa Rica, something that, for maximum emotional impact, was kept secret from the participants until they arrived in that country. That retreat, which included physical journeys and intensive interpersonal and group-level conversations, fundamentally changed the way the leaders felt about themselves, each other, and the company. Through this simple but profound series of conversations, held in the context of a magnificent and fragile ecology, people learned new ways of communicating with one another that would translate to new ways of operating together as a business. When they returned home and began to apply their learning to themselves and the company, Costa Rica came to be a phrase that referred to the genuine kinds of conversations and emotional connection that participants experienced and wanted to continue back at the home office. Indeed, in the first year and a half of the change process, words such as authentic relationships, integrity, accountability, and empowerment came to symbolize a host of new leadership behaviors. And although those are common words, at Unilever, they've taken on special meaning as a result of the processes in which its leaders have participated. Today, several years into the change agenda, leadership development at Unilever is fundamentally affecting how business is conducted and relationships are managed. Business leaders are being held accountable for results and for supporting the new mindset and the new emotional reality. Human resource systems such as succession planning, compensation, and performance management are becoming aligned with the change strategy, focusing deliberately on supporting the new culture. Developing leaders involves more than just the people themselves. As we've seen, it also involves the organizational culture and systems that drive and constrain people's behavior, the groups and teams in which people spend their time, and more obvious issues such as the current state of the organization and the external challenges it faces. Using leadership development to address all of these levels builds greater resonance in the organization. A good example is the multifaceted effort to develop leadership at Merrill Lynch's U.S. private client business. Getting bullish on leadership. Already a highly successful business with a long history of solid, experienced leadership, Merrill Lynch's U.S. private client business unit was confronting new challenges. Throughout the industry, competition was coming from unexpected sources. Clients' demands for services were becoming markedly more insistent, the global marketplace was now a reality, and the e-commerce revolution was threatening the very core of the business itself. To ensure that leadership strengths would grow with the business unit's changing needs, First Vice President Linda Pitari worked with Tim McManus, Director of Leadership Development and Training, to create a more systematic method for developing leaders, with a focus on emotional intelligence competencies. We knew that the challenges of the coming few years were going to be different from anything we'd faced before, Pitari told us. We wanted to be sure our leaders were learning how to operate in a new environment. The process began with identifying people in the field, as well as the home office, who had management potential. As time went on and the initiative progressed, Pitari and her team coached these managers in their first few critical years on the job. The experiences that managers had in the field, coupled with good mentoring, enabled the company to develop good leaders. But one of the main reasons that Petare's leadership development initiative worked so well was that she went beyond a focus on people. She understood the importance of looking broadly at the business's underlying culture and how it supported or inhibited leadership. That is a dramatic difference from most development programs, which begin and end with the individual. This book is continued on Cassette 7, Side 1.